All right, greetings. Welcome in. It's Better Slash Stand Show number 98 coming to you from the Pine Room Watchdog Studio in beautiful downtown Wheeling. It's not really beautiful. It's miserable out there. It's hot, and the traffic patterns are a damn disaster. So anyway, thanks for joining us today. We got a big show. Thanks to everybody that tuned in on our Watchdog part of the show last week, our middle hour broadcast on the Watchdog leading into our Football Fridays pregame show, which will this week take you into Wheeling Park at Parkersburg South. Coach on the call down there with Luke Doyle. I'll be doing the pregame in the studio with Jeff Doyle, and Chris will be on the controls as the guys will be out of town this weekend for Soup's wedding. So we'll see how that goes. It should be a good time for them, and hopefully it's a good time for us, and hopefully it's a good time for you. So Football Friday show loaded, jam-packed all day. Baron Bob's kick it off at noon to 2 with the good old boys show. And then it'll be us from 2 to 5, our Gumby's Jill's Gentlemen's Club Football Friday show, which will be probably from the studio this week, as half the crew's gone, and Coach will have to leave to head to Parkersburg South. So lots going on this week for the Pine Room guys, but that's all right. We're going to keep you informed and keep you up to date on everything. So be sure and check us out on the Watchdog throughout the week, Monday, Tuesday, and Fridays. And Fridays is just a loaded day, as we said. And we'll have Better's Last Stand from our 5 to 6 spot, taking you into the pregame show for Parkersburg South and Wheeling Park. All right, recapping last week, show number 97, but this is show number 98. So recapping our picks on 97, we were up about 5.5 units, a little over 5.5 units, plus 560 on the week. So turn us a profit. We were wonderful in the AFL, outstanding. We're getting hot at the right time. 9-2 in AFL plays last week. Fortunately, that was on the middle part of the program. So hopefully some of the people listening on the Watchdog Network were able to check those out and maybe experience Australian rules football for the very first time. We were also pretty good in CFL, finally, for a change. 4-1 on the CFL. Premier League, 4-2. And then here's where we get down to the misery. And, you know, I actually altered my bet a little bit from what I actually gave out on the show. I gave that Georgia Tech and Florida State game over. I ended up betting just Georgia Tech's team total over in the game because the more I thought about DJ Uliungalele, I did not like it. And Florida State, just not a very good team. They're going to struggle offensively with him, and I just don't like anything about that team. So I ended up going with Georgia Tech over, but 0-6 on the games I gave out. The dogs were barking. I should have known better than that. But it was weird. The public was a little bit on some of the dogs early, but then it ended up being pretty much a landslide of Florida State money, which I wasn't on that part of it. But some of the other teams really underachieved last week, but really bad games, just terrible, terrible games. Hopefully they're a little better this week, but I can't guarantee that. We'll talk plenty about that in the middle part of the program. Golf, we were 3 for 7 for our guys making the top 20. So that was at least the minimum of the bets that we gave out. Finau, Zalatoris, and Cantlay all made the top 20 there. So they were all in the top 15, actually. Ferrari double top 6, got that one home. That was a good value there. So we cashed that play. Graham Rahal, top 10 in IndyCar. That was a good one for us. AFL futures, again, we were 6-2 on the season with those. Cashed a couple of them last week. NASCAR, 2 top 10s, Keselowski and Gibbs. And, man, what a disappointment. We had guys knocking on the door all night. Justin Haley had a bomb of a price, had a great car, gets collected late. Keselowski gets a penalty, then gets collected late. Gibbs made his way up there, but it just took him a while. But it was a disappointing race, as usual, at Daytona. If you escape the wrecks, you can win. If you don't, you don't. Harrison Burton gets it done at a huge price. We'll talk about that with Sam and many more things about racing and the Pirates. They blew a huge lead today. I think they were up 10-5 at one point on the Cubs. And the last time I checked, it was 14-10 Cubs. Bednar comes apart in the ninth inning. And that's a team that's just given up. And we'll talk about that with Sam. But there's no even use wasting our time on the Pirates anymore. They're absolutely horrible. Sam had Keselowski, and he had Lando Norris to win at in the F1 race in the Netherlands. So he got that one done at 175 plus 175. All right, baseball, as we just said, Pirates are pretty much finished right now. Not pretty much. They are finished. They've been finished for weeks, quite honestly. They've really been finished since they made those trades at the trade deadline, when they really didn't bolster their team a whole lot. Everybody wanted to just talk themselves into the Pirates being good and being a contender, but they really never were. So they're just coming back to the level that they should have been at all season, and they blew another lead for Skeens, and things continue to spiral out of control, and I think it's now you just have to fire Shelty. 14-10 is the final. The Cubs win it. Just inexcusable defeat. They've moved O'Neill Cruz to center field now, which makes no sense. He had an error today already. this is a club that is literally trying to lose. So I really don't know what their game plan is. I really don't understand it. But recapping baseball, just telling you where we are with some of the bets that we gave out a few weeks ago. We gave out the Red Sox to make the playoffs. That one is literally hanging on by like threads. I mean, it is getting very late, very, very late. They're four out now. They actually were even worse the other day. Now they're down to four out. Mariners 5.5 out. They're on life support also. The Twins, I thought, would back up a little bit, but they're still being able to tread enough water to stay in it right now. Atlanta is the last team in the National League. The Mets on their heels a little bit, three games out. And the Giants have kind of tapered off. So all those bets, the Giants, the Mariners, and the Red Sox that we gave out, not looking good. We got to get going here in the last few weeks of the season. But it's still, there's still some time left, but teams have got to start to win some games. The Orioles and Yankees keep juggling at the top of the AL East. And Houston looks to me as if they're going to be solidified in the spot in the West. So Arizona and Padres continue to play well. So we are on the Padres. So that is a good thing. We've got a lot of futures on the Padres, and we had a couple on the Diamondbacks as well. So hopefully those ones are looking all right for you, but we still have three that we got a lot of work to do, but they're not impossible by any means. So we still got time, and we'll see what happens when it comes to baseball. It's getting down to the end here. It's the panic time for some of these teams. Tennis, let's get into that. Actually, let's do golf first. Just go through a few golf. We're down to the Tour Championship right now. It's the final tournament of the year, and I'm actually very glad. We've had some good winners in golf. We had Lydia Ko. We had Matsuyama. We had Matsuyama way back at 70-something. We've had some winners. I'm just sick of it. Like, PGA Tour is just not very good anymore, and there's 30 guys left here at the Tour Championship at East Lake. This is the weird thing where they give a guy a 10-shot lead. So Scheffler starts with a 10-shot lead. Xander Schauffele's up 8 on everybody, or at 8 under. It's really a stupid scoring method, but I think I honestly think Hideki Matsuyama is live to win this too. He's had a pretty good year. He's 10-1. He's 3 shots back. He starts the tournament 3 shots behind Scheffler. I'd take a shot with him. If he's hanging around 4 or 5 shots on the weekend or on Friday morning, I would get on him immediately. He's a guy that can go very, very low and can put some pressure. Now, Scheffler will probably win this, but can't bet him at +110. It's just ridiculous. But I'll be glad when this is over. The golf, it's just not been very exciting. Keegan Bradley wins last week 75-1. We had a few guys dancing around there, but not an overly good week. Patrick Cantlay let us down again. Thought he hit 25-1. He'd start 6 shots back. Morikawa starts 6 shots back. Thought maybe they could get into the contention if they could get cut it to 2 or 3 by Saturday. They might have a shot. And then Victor Hovland at 60-1. He starts way back too, but you know, he's a guy that could go put together back-to-back low rounds, whereas Matsuyama usually has one really great round and then kind of flattens, plateaus. But anyway, Matsuyama is my pick. I'll go with him, and then Hovland, Cantlay, and Morikawa at the Tour Championship, the final PGA golf event of the season. All right, U.S. Open Tennis, I posted these the other day. It kicked off on Monday. So far, all of our future bets are still alive. Recapping them in the women's, Arena Sabalenka. She is now the favorite, actually. We bet her before she went favorite. Swiatek started as the favorite, but Sabalenka has looked awesome. She's incredible on hard courts. Her power is just extreme. Her shoulder injury seems healed, and she is the girl to beat in this tournament. Don't let anybody kid you. It's not Coco Gauff. It's not Iga. It's Arena Sabalenka. She is the girl to beat right now. You can find her still around 3-1, a little bit south of that. But she is incredibly good. She's great on hard courts. Her serve is exceptional. She's got her mind together. She's won 2 majors. This girl is really, really good, and I think she wins this tournament for sure. Quarter one, Mira Andreeva, take another shot with her. This is a young, really talented girl, teenager, she barely looks even old enough to be out there, but man, she is going to be exceptional at some point, and she's getting better and better. She had a quick exit out in Wimbledon, so it's given her a lot of time to get ready for this one. Had a good run last year, played well in Australia. I love her game, and I think she's alive to win quarter one. So we bet her to win quarter one. She's 22-1 to win it all. Don't think she's quite ready to get there, but it wouldn't surprise me if she makes it to the semifinals of this tournament. Karolina Mukova, she's another one, had a great year last year, was hurt a lot this year, but has gotten healthy and is starting to find her rhythm again. Her to win quarter two was another bet that we had. These are all posted at BLS_PRP. So Karolina Mukova, 36-1 to win the tournament, but That wasn't the recommendation. The recommendation is to play her to win quarter two. So both of those, I think, are still live. If you come into the weekend and you see them, you're probably not getting the prices you originally got, but you're going to still get a nice plus price on either one of them right now. Jess Pegula played pretty well so far. The Americans have played all right, minus Sloane Stephens, who I was really high on at even money. She destroyed her girl in the first set and then absolutely collapsed in the last two to fall 7-5, 7-5. It was an awful loss. Madison Keys won. She's a very good hardcourt player. She'll probably make a good run here. Paola Badoza won again this morning. She's pretty tough. Alina Rybakina, who's a former major winner and is a very good player, her game looks a little off. Swiatek looks a little off, and so does Coco Gauff. So I would go against all three of those girls. I think they're all beatable. Sabalenka didn't play at Wimbledon. She didn't play in the Olympics. She is rested. She's ready to go, and she's healthy. And I think this is a huge advantage for her. The extreme heat up there in Flushing Meadows, this girl is just going through these tournaments like just crushing everybody. So I expect her to keep it up, and she's going to be really tough to beat. BHM, Beatrice Hadid Maia. I think she can make a little bit of a run here. She's a scrappy, feisty player, could get herself into the quarterfinals, so keep a little eye on her as well. And then Naomi Osaka is coming back from giving birth and just been out of tennis for a while. She's starting to round into a little bit of form now. Not to the point where I would say that she's going to have a shot of being able to beat Sabalenka or somebody like that, but she's getting close to being able to be back to where the form that she was originally in. Novak Djokovic, I think he and Carlos Alcaraz are the guys to beat on the men's side. Yannick Sinner, you can throw him in there. Djokovic will probably make a good run in here. I have him to go to the semis. That was one of the future bets. But my guy to win this thing, I'm going a little bit off the beaten path here. Guy wasn't allowed to play in the Olympics and is a great hardcourt player and has won this tournament before and was obviously a year when Djokovic wasn't allowed to play. But Daniil Medvedev, the Russian, this guy is a really good player on hard courts, and his serve is outstanding. And I like him to be able to win quarter one. That's a 3-1 price. And then to win it all, 14-1. And also think to make the finals or the semifinals, wherever you can find decent prices. This guy's a really good player. He's a major winner. He's arguably the third or fourth best guy. And on a hard court, he's probably number two. So move him up a little bit for that. These other guys are getting a little worn down. Sasha Zverev playing really good. Nice to see him bouncing back this season. But these guys are wearing down. They've played a lot of tennis. Medvedev got a little break there with the Olympics because he wasn't allowed to play. So I think that plays into the same advantage that Sabalenka has. So Medvedev's my pick to win it all, but obviously I back that up with Joker as well. Sinner, not back to strength yet. And then the American contingent, I just don't think they're going to have enough to be able to knock off either Medvedev or Djokovic or even Alcaraz, who's going to be good. We'll see if Shelton, Hubert Hurkacz, Grigor Dimitrov, both guys with massive serves. They can both make the semifinals or the quarters for sure, or quarters or semis. I think they're both live, but not going to be able to beat the likes of Daniil Medvedev or Novak Djokovic or Carlos Alcaraz and probably even Yannick Sinner or Sasha Zverev. So they're just a cut below that. So that's where we ended up on our tennis plays. I'll post more of them, anything I like match to match, on our Twitter page, BLS_PRP. We're going to take a break here. The Bettors Last Stand 98th edition coming to you from the Pine Room Watchdog Studio. We're going to take a break, as I said, and we're going to come back and we're going to talk all football. It's going to be all forms of football, round footballs, semi-round footballs, and then the old pigskins, the North American football. It's Bettors Last Stand Show 98 from the Pine Room Studios. We'll be back in a moment.
Reminder, this show is for informational and entertainment purposes only. All wagering activities should only be conducted by those 21 years of age or older and within the confines of federal, state, and local law. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, contact 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. All right, men, load the cannons and hold the line. You're listening to Bettors Last Stand.
All right, greetings. Welcome in. It's Bettors Last Stand, show number 98, coming to you from the Pine Room Watchdog Studios in downtown Wheeling. This will take you up to your pregame show for Wheeling Park in Parkersburg South. A Patriots versus the Patriots tonight here on the Watchdog. You're going to be in for a good one as Coach Dell is on the call along with Luke Doyle. And we'll be bringing that to you live from Parkersburg this evening after this pregame show. The Better's Last Stand is taking you into the pregame show. Then we're going to do the pregame show. Then it'll be Coach and Luke from Parkersburg South. So hopefully you enjoyed last week's program. First time Better's Last Stand aired a full hour in the 5 o'clock Football Fridays catalog here for the Pine Room Studios in Watchdog. So it was exciting to be a part of it last week. We had two games. We had a game on Thursday, a game on Friday. And this week we'll be back at it. It'll be the Football Friday show all day on Friday, beginning with Bear and Bob, the good old boys at noon. Of course, you probably listened to that already. And then it was us from 2 to 5 from the Gumby's and Jill's Gentlemen's Club sponsored Pine Room Watchdog Football Friday show, which we actually had to do in studio today. And then our pregame show will follow this here on Better's Last Stand. So thanks for being with us. We had a good week last week. If you listen to the picks that we gave out during the Football Friday portion of the Better's Last Stand program, we were 9-2 in our Australian rules. We were 4-1 in our CFL, EPL, soccer, 4-2. And then the bad one here, 0-6 in college football. Yikes, that was bad. Really bad performance, but not surprised. Like I said to Coach recently, this is a really tough. You're better off playing underdogs, I think, in about all these games because nobody really knows how these teams are going to pan out with all these transfers and all these strange things going on. All right, let's get right to it. Bad beats, let's start there as we bring you in. We're going to talk all football here. We're going to go through some industry stuff and some bad beats. Coke Zero 400, if you had any of the guys late in the race there, Brad Keselowski and some of the others. Brad Keselowski gets a penalty. He gets in an accident. Justin Haley, who we had as well, a couple other guys in the mix for us to cash nice tickets, all wrecked out of the race. It's just chaos there at Daytona late in the race, so that was not cool. So tough one there. And then the Pirates. If you have the Pirates over their win total, you have to be sick right now. The Pirates are 62-70. Actually, 62-71 because they lost again today. They blew a 10-5 lead, lost 14-10 to the Cubs. If you're needing them, if you're needing to get them over 76.5 or 77.5, you are in a world of trouble with 29 games left right now. So I feel bad for anybody that was on them. That's a really tough one there. As a team that started out high hopes, trade deadline, they had high hopes, all-star break, they think they're in it, and they have crashed and burned, and heads need to roll, but will they? That's the question. Industry news, the NFL is recommitting to the National Council on Problem Gambling with a three-year, $6.4 million grant after the NFL head of security, Kathy Lanier, said that threats toward players have increased and are much of the time fueled by losses in fantasy football and sports betting. So, yikes. If you're one of these people that are threatening athletes, college, pro, anybody, because you're losing, you are an idiot, and you should not be betting, and you should not be participating in any type of activities with other people. You need to go to a padded room somewhere and settle yourself down. You can't act like that. It's inexcusable behavior by anybody to participate in such actions. The league also has hired integrity representatives for each and every team. So this is going to be interesting. They're going to be looking into betting. They're going to be looking into the players that are potentially on the take here. And then they're going to have fan situations where you're going to have fans banned from games and banned from NFL properties. And that's a good thing. I got no problem with any of that. Jared Goff, 25-1 right now, drawing a lot of attention from bettors to be the MVP of the league. So Goff getting a lot of attention. He's around 25-1. MGM said they're most liable to Jared Goff. CJ Stroud, a close second in most places as well, taking a lot of interest. Colorado remains the biggest liability for all sportsbook as the Buffaloes take on North Dakota State here in week one. And that game right now is the biggest handle of any game on the board. Has the biggest handle of any game on the board. If you can believe that, it is just nuts. The Deion Sanders effect is in full swing. And Colorado, who's expected to be not so good, but people are all over them to win the college football playoff, to make the college football playoff, to win the Big 12. Lots of different bets for Colorado. I can't really say that I'm too worried about that. We have some exposure to Colorado, but I can't really worry about it too much. I just don't see how they can possibly accomplish any of those things. But we shall see. You never know. Mixed bag on Notre Dame and Texas A&M. Well, the line has moved towards A&M, up to 3 now after opening at 1. We're getting a lot of ticket play on Notre Dame, which worries me because I was kind of on the Irish. I thought the Irish probably are the better team here, probably should be favored in the game. But when the public is on its side, I tend to shy away from it. So I am probably not going to be on Notre Dame this weekend. I just can't. My gut says they're going to win that game, but I can't trust the public, and I agree on this. This is a problem. It looks like some sharp money coming in on Texas A&M. And then the most lopsided ticket counts of the week in college football. These are the ticket counts where they're just landslides of one side. It's not necessarily the money, because the money usually comes from the sharper guys. But ticket counts, that's a sign of public interest. Here we go. 88% on Oklahoma State, -9.5. 86% on Western Illinois, +35. That's a rarity. Usually the public not on dogs like that. LSU, 83%. LSU -4. 84% on Bucknell, +33. There's another strange dog taking some ticket count. Some share of the ticket count, at least a lot of the share of the ticket count. 82% on Georgia -13.5 against Clemson. 82% on Michigan -21. 81% on Miami -2.5, and 78% on Oregon -43.5. We'll talk about all those games here in just a couple of minutes. The White Sox have clinched their win total for the year, so you already got a baseball win total in the books. If you're on the White Sox under, you've cashed that one. They were set with a opening season total of 61.5. They've won 31 games right now, and they've lost 101. So you can light the cigar on that one. That's a good one. Travers recap, talked about that last week. Not a great performance, but we said if fierceness would ever show up, it would be a contender, and he did. He ran a great race. He won, and he got the job done at 3-1, paid about $980 on the win. Torpedo Anna was second, strong second. She was gaining ground there, kind of a head bob at the wire, almost got up to beat fierceness. Sierra Leone runs second. Dornick was third. So we had our three of our four horses in the superfecta. We had them right there, 2, 3, and 4. We nailed all those. But Corporate Power was a little bit lackluster. He never really got going. He did beat a couple of the horses with shorter prices than him. He beat Honor Marie, who I knew is terrible. I've been saying that all spring and summer. But Corporate Power looked just way, way out of his league. So, no winners there for us, but that's all right. We move on to, head towards the Breeders' Cup trail here next. So that should be, lots of good stuff, lots of potential for, winners there at the Breeders' Cup. All right, let's shift it over to round football here. English Premier League into its third week right now. Not a ton of things interest me here, but I'm going to go through a few games that do. On Saturday, it's Fulham at Ipswich Town. Interesting matchup here. Ipswich Town, the team who's just been promoted. They scored a goal against Manchester City last week. I think they're feeling pretty good about themselves. This is a home match against the team Fulham, who I had bet to be relegated. We gave that future out here on the show. So we're going to take a shot with Ipswich Town right here. They have lost the last six to Fulham, so full disclosure here. This is a hunch play. This is a the ground is going to be rocking type play. The Plowboys will be ready to go. I like Ipswich Town here plus the 190 to win that match against Fulham. Wolves and Nottingham. Wolves gave up 6 goals to Chelsea on Saturday, and they look like they could have some defensive problems. Nottingham Forest, very good offensive team at home. When they travel, they struggle to score. But at home, you can always count on Forest to put at least one in the back of the net. So we're going to go with both teams to score here at -145. That's both teams to score, Wolves and Nottingham Forest. That's Wolverhampton Wanderers, if you're looking for the full name. Nottingham Forest for the EPL teams. That is a both teams to score, BTTS. Both teams to score in that one. Another game interesting to me, AFC Bournemouth taking on Everton. Everton may be the worst team in the league right now. They are futile and feeble on offense. They cannot score. That could be a problem. But I think AFC Bournemouth also has some defensive deficiencies. I think Everton gets on the board here, and I think this game goes over 2.5. Bournemouth, probably a pretty good side at +150 here. Everton, like I say, really, really struggling. A parlay of Bournemouth money line and over pays about +215. The home team has won the last 5 here, so that's an interesting one. So if you're worried about that aspect of it, don't play Bournemouth, just play the over. Southampton and Brentford. Really, really like Brentford here. -140 money line bet on them. I think that's really good value. I think it should be a little bit higher than that. If you want to get a little better price, play them on the Asian handicap. -0.75. That means if they win by 2 goals, you get even money on that. So take that bet. I think Brentford is pretty good. They can score. And Southampton, the other team that I picked to be relegated. So relegate, we're going against Fulham and Southampton, two of the teams we picked to be relegated. Let's see. The last two times that Brentford has hosted Southampton, they've outscored them 6-0. The 2-3-0 shutout. So keep that in mind. Brentford, another team, plays pretty good at home. That is also a Saturday game. So that, again, that's Brentford on the Asian handicap or money line. And then Crystal Palace and Chelsea. Chelsea put 6 in last week. Palace, not in a game that I expected. That was a game we had a BTTS, and it was only a 2-0 game. So not how we wanted that to turn out, but Chelsea very bad at the back, and I think that Crystal Palace will score and probably get at least one against them, maybe two, and Chelsea will score as well. So maybe over 3 there, but both teams to score at -135, I think is incredibly good value. It's a London derby. It'll be a little bit testy, so you could get a penalty. You could get some cards. Not always a bad time to play cards over in a match like that either. All right, moving along here. Now we're going to go over to the Canadian side of things, the CFL. We are now in week 13, the CFL. We went 4-2 last week. We'll take that anytime, and it's not easy. CFL is tough to get a gauge on. Montreal, the best team in the league, they're 10-1. They are off this week, so no easy winner there with being able to play in Montreal, but we didn't need it last week, so hopefully we can make it happen again. All right, let's go Saturday game. These games are Saturday, Sunday, and Monday with no NFL going this weekend. Saturday, this is a matchup between the Ottawa Red Blacks and the BC Lions. It'll be the Lions at home, -3.5. The total is 51. The last 5 games in this series have went over the total. The home team has won 5 out of 6 in the last 6 meetings, of course. So a little lean to BC, but I'm not going to take a shot. I think Ottawa actually is a little bit better than BC, but on the road, not going to mess with that 3, 3.5, but I am going to go over the 51. There's been some really high-scoring games. As I said, the last 5 have went over in the series. So that's Ottawa and BC over 51 on Saturday. Sunday, it's Winnipeg, the Blue Bombers, at the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Rough Riders, -3, total 47. Last 2 in this series have stayed under the total, and the home team has also won the last 5 in this one. Zach Collaros, Steubenville's Zach Collaros, who's been an incredibly good player in this league for several years. MVP caliber quarterback, taking his team to the Grey Cup. I mean, this guy's really, really good. Been off to a really bad start this year. He's got just 6 touchdowns. Now, we're in week 13. He's got 6 touchdowns. He has 12 interceptions. The offense for Winnipeg has been very, very poor this season so far. So we're going to go under 47 in this matchup with Saskatchewan and Winnipeg on Sunday. The Monday games, we have 2 of them. It'll be the Toronto Argonauts on the road at the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Toronto, -5 on the road, total 52.5. Toronto has won 5 out of 6 in this series, and I'm going with Toronto here. They're much better. Hamilton's 2-9. Toronto's 6-4. Laying less than a touchdown on the road with Toronto. Don't love that, but I think they do enough to get this done. I think they win this by close to 2 scores, between 10 and 13 points. So we're going with Toronto -5 on Monday. That's a Monday day game for Labor Day. And then we got the Edmonton Elks at the Calgary Stampeders, the Battle of Alberta in Canadian football form. It'll be the Stampeders -2.5, the total 50.5. Both these teams under 500. Edmonton's been playing a lot better lately, but I don't know. The home team has won 4 out of 5 in the series. I think Edmonton's strong run comes to an end. I think Calgary gets the job done here by a narrow margin. But my main play in this game is going to be over in the game, over the 50.5, Edmonton and Calgary. I like that. I think both teams will score here. Neither team has a very good defense. Calgary, one of the worst tackling teams that I've ever seen in my entire life at any level of football. So Edmonton's going to score a little bit on them, and I think that will lead to an over 50.5. So again, Ottawa and BC over 51 on Saturday. On Sunday, it'll be Saskatchewan and Winnipeg under 47. On Monday, it'll be Toronto -5 on the road at Hamilton, and Edmonton and Calgary at 6 o'clock on Monday over 50.5. Those are our CFL plays for this week here. The Bettors Last Stand 98th edition. You're listening to that right here on the Watchdog as we get ready to take you up to the pregame show for Parkersburg South and Wheeling Park, kicking off the West Virginia high school football season tonight on the Watchdog. So you don't want to go anywhere. So now we've done soccer. We've done the round football. We did the Canadian football. Now we're going all the way down to Australia. And there's no actual games this week as the finals begin next week, but by the time we tape another show will have already had a game in the books, actually two of them. So I'm going to give you my plays on those right now, as well as some potential futures that are worth looking at in the Australian rules realm of things here. All right, so we concluded last week. Again, we had a really strong week. We were 9-2 in our AFL plays in the final week of the season. It was a fun weekend of Aussie rules football, that is for sure. So here's how the table stacks up, or the ladder, as they like to call it. Sydney wins the regular season. They will be hosting GWS. That game, I believe, is going to be next Saturday. So they play the 1-4 in that matchup. And I'll explain the playoffs, how that works here in a moment. And then you got Brisbane against Carlton in the 5-8 matchup, the 6-7 matchup, the Western Bulldogs and the Hawthorn Hawks, and the 2-3 matchup, the Port Adelaide Power and the Geelong Cats. Now, Western and Hawthorn will play the first game of the week, actually the second game of the week. Port and Geelong play the first one next Thursday morning very early. So how this works is the top four teams, so that's Sydney and Greater Western Sydney, so and they play each other, and then Port Adelaide and Geelong play each other. The winners of those games then get a bye through to the preliminary final, so they skip through the next round. So that's how valuable it is to be in the top four. You win, you get to skip a game while the other team's got to beat the hell out of each other for another week. So a major advantage there. Major, major advantage. And then the losers of the elimination rounds, which are the 5, 8, 6, 7 games, are out. And then the losers, or the winners of the elimination round, will then play the losers of the 2, 3, 1, 4, so to speak. So if you have any questions about that, you can look it up on AFL.com. They have great insight there and a cool bracket, and it shows how everything works. So this will go on here for a couple more weeks. I'm really excited about it. I'm looking forward to it. And I think there's some value here from the futures market, because Sydney, the Swans, who had played just exceptional footy for probably, I'd say, the first 16 to 18 weeks of the season, they've looked a little beaten and battered lately. They lost some games they probably shouldn't have. Yes, they had some injuries. They're operating at a little bit more health, you know, top health right now. But they're very beatable, and they're not an experienced team. They got a lot of guys that really have never been in a pressure situation like this. So I'm not sure about their game against GWS. We'll talk about that one more next week, because that is a weekend game, and I'll have a better idea watching the number. Sydney opened 8.5 point favorite in the game, 172.5. is the total, but Sydney is the favorite to win this. They're the number one seed in the regular season, the winner in the regular season, plus 275. I just can't recommend that. They're just not good enough to be plus 275. They're very, very beatable, and I think that you're going to see GWS give them a hell of a game. GWS is the second choice at plus 450. So ironically, the teams who are matching up in the first round are the two top betting choices in the outright market to win the grand final. That's questionable to me. And if I had to make a pick out of those two, it's definitely going to be GWS. They're double the price now. They haven't played very well the last two outings against Sydney. I think Sydney's beat them the last three times. But this is a whole different setup for Sydney. Those are regular season games. This is a playoff game. GWS had some experience from last year and past years where, you know, they've performed and they're able to score. So probably over is going to be all right in that. Although I did look last year, I think they were 2-2 to the under in the first round of playoff games. It was also 2-2 for dogs and favorites. So pretty split there. Brisbane and Carlton. I think Brisbane is a live team here. I think they got a very good first round matchup. Yes, they would have preferred to not have to play in the 5-8-6-7 game, where if they have something go wrong and they somehow lose, they're done. But Brisbane is good. For a while, for a 6 weeks, 8 week stretch towards the end of the year, prior to the last 2 weeks, they were playing the best of anybody. So 7-1 on Brisbane, I cannot talk anybody off of that. I think that's a very, very good spot for Brisbane. I really, really like them. I think they're a contender here. The 6-7 matchup, I think you can toss both teams. Western and Hawthorn, I don't see. At 9-1 and 10-1, both those teams probably pretty happy to just be here, especially Hawthorn. You'll get a big effort out of them, but I imagine that they would fall flat the next time if they were to win. And then Port Adelaide and Geelong, arguably the two best teams in this entire AFL, they're playing each other in the first round. So it's a little bit tricky. The team who wins this has an incredibly good shot to win everything. Port Adelaide 5-1. I saw some sixes out there too. And then Geelong at 8-1. Geelong, they got some veterans. They have some guys going for their last hurrah here. Port Adelaide has been the best team to me most of the season when they're healthy. I guess you can make the argument Sydney was the best team early on before the game started to matter. Then Brisbane played the best football. But Port Adelaide has always been right there when they're healthy. They've been there the whole year. Geelong's had a ton of injuries, good enough to win at any point. So I think Port Adelaide at 5-1, Geelong at 8-1, and Brisbane at 7-1. All three of those teams make a lot of sense for future bets to win this, to make the grand final, however you want to bet it. You can find good prices. Those, to me, are the three best teams in this tournament. So this week, I can't really pick a side here. Port won the game in the regular season against Geelong, 101-95. Again, this is next Thursday, 101-95. It's going to be high scoring here. Both these teams can struggle a little bit defensively at times. Port has the better defense. Geelong, can Tom Hawkins and Dangerfield and Cameron do it one last time? Can they do it? Or, I mean, will Charlie Dixon and Sam Powell Pepper, I mean, those guys, you know, can Geelong hang with Port Adelaide, who's playing really good right now? I don't know if they can, but I like the game over. The total 164.5, so we're going to go over 164.5. And then in the other game, it'll be Western and Hawthorne. Western minus 3.5, total 166.5. The last two in this series have just soared over the total. Hawthorne won over earlier this year, 98-91, and the last one, Western won 119-62. So 166.5 seems gettable here. I would be a tad bit worried because these teams aren't used to being in these playoff games, so maybe they play a little bit more guarded, but Hawthorne's only way of probably winning this game is to go full throttle, and I think that's probably what they're going to try to do. So over in both games, nice simple plays, over 164 in Port Geelong and over 166 in Western and Hawthorne. All right, so we got those two AFL games in the books, at least as far as giving our plays out. We'll talk about the other two coming up next week. NFL, final thoughts on that before we jump into the college card, which everybody wants to hear about. We had Mike Florio on our Watchdog Radio Network Pine Room show on Tuesday. Talked to Mike for about an hour about his new book called Son of Mine. It's a mobster book. It's the sequel to Father of Mine that he released out a year or two ago. And we appreciated him joining us. We talked about his book. It sounds really, really good. And then we talked a lot of things NFL. So get on over to our website, pineroomstudios.com. You can listen to the radio replays, radio recaps on there. It will have the full interview with Mike Florio for a full hour on the Watchdog Radio Network. So check that out if you missed it on Tuesday. Incredible insight. I can sit here and tell you things about the NFL and what I think is going to happen in the NFL, but who better than Mike Florio to actually do it? You get his firsthand accounts of everything that's going on, from player personnel to the teams that could be dangerous to hot seat coaches, the surprise teams. He's got everything covered and does such a wonderful job with his Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports. So if you're not familiar with him, he's a Wheeling guy, Wheeling Central guy. A great guy. We're happy to call him a friend of the show and a friend of the Pine Room. So we appreciate him taking time to spend it with us on the Watchdog for an hour. So if you haven't caught that yet, please, you'll be missing out. It'll be your loss if you don't go out there and check it. It's a great, great listen. A couple other reminders. This portion of the program brought to you by the Brownie House. Get over there to yesbrownies.com today. Order your brownies for your football tailgate. Use the promo code PINEROOM for 20% off your order. And again, thanks to Gumby's and Jill's Gentlemen's Club for sponsoring our Football Friday shows each and every Friday. We're usually on location at a various Gumby's property up and down the river, and they are hiring. So if you're looking for some good employment, check out Gumby's or Geno's, and you can find full-time or part-time work. We're happy to be affiliated with them, and we appreciate all the sponsors of the Watchdog Football Friday shows and games. We have tons of sponsors that we go over. We'll talk about those in the pregame show as well as throughout the broadcast this evening. Again, this is Bettors Last Stand, show number 98. This portion of it coming to you on the Watchdog Network here on your Football Friday, getting ready to bring you Wheeling Park and Parkersburg South, live from Parkersburg South. We're going to have the pregame show right after Bettors Last Stand here at 6 o'clock Eastern, and that will be followed by Coach and Luke Doyle on the call from Wheeling Park at Parkersburg South. We're going to take a quick break here on Bettors Last Stand on the Watchdog Network. We will be back momentarily with more football action here on a Football Friday.
Remind reminder, this show is for informational and entertainment purposes only. All wagering activities should only be conducted by those 21 years of age or older and within the confines of federal, state, and local law. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, contact 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. All right, men, load the cannons and hold the line. You're listening to Better's Last Stand.
All right, welcome back in. It's Better's Last Stand, show number 98, live here on the Watchdog. Actually, we're not live. We're taped on the Watchdog. But nonetheless, the Pine Room Studios brings you Better's Last Stand, show number 98, on the Watchdog Radio Network, leading you up to the pregame show between Parkersburg South and Wheeling Park. The pregame show is not between them. That's between us. But the game that follows the pregame show will be Parkersburg South and Wheeling Park. They host Wheeling Park tonight in the West Virginia Class Quad A opener, if you can believe that. There's now four divisions. We'll talk more about that during the pregame show, which comes up next. Again, thanks to our Watchdog team. Everything that's gone on here with the Watchdog is just very, very exciting. So thanks again to Kayleen and Rocky and Howard and Lola and Bob Slider and Bob and Bear, who started the Football Fridays last week and did it again here today on the Watchdog. They were great. We did our Football Friday show sponsored by Gumby's and Jill's Gentlemen's Club here just before this Better's Last Stand. And then again, the pregame show coming up next, leading you into Parkersburg South and Wheeling Park. Matt here along with you from the Pine Room Studios. I'll be joined on the pregame tonight by Jeff Doyle and Chris Pavlik, who will be behind the glass filling in for Jubb and Jarrett and Cooley and Soup. And Soup is getting married this weekend, so best of luck to Soup and Sammy and everybody that's attending the wedding. Hopefully everybody had safe travels and is having a wonderful, wonderful weekend. We will see those guys back here next week. Wheeling Central football will be live here on the Watchdog, and then we'll have Wheeling Park as well and John Marshall. Don't forget, watchdognetwork.com is where you want to be for all your Watchdog football. We are going to carry every game but one for Wheeling Park this year, every game but one for Wheeling Central this year, and I believe every game for John Marshall on watchdognetwork.com. You can stream them all. Wheeling Park will be on WVLY for the majority of the season, and on WKKX, it'll be Wheeling Central and then the John Marshall Monarchs over on watchdognetwork.com. You can actually listen to all three streams on watchdognetwork.com. So exciting stuff there. Hopefully you enjoyed the pregame and postgame. And actually, we didn't have the full postgame. The guys did the postgame from the actual stadium, but we did a halftime show, did a few quarter breaks for scores and things like that. So tune in. If you're a high school football fan, we picked the lines. We picked the games on point spreads. I make point spreads for the games up and down the river here of local interest, and we picked those, and we had some fun with it last week. This week we start our competition, the Duggar's Saucy Spread Challenge. So thanks to our man Duggar at Duggar's Famous Chicken and Wings for sponsoring us once again this year. Kayleen was a champion last year. We sent out those games to everybody participating this morning, and we have five from West Virginia and five from Ohio, and we'll pick those against the spread, obviously for fun only and bragging rights. But Kayleen was the champion last year, so we'll see if she can duplicate that. But those are the things you look forward to here on the Watchdog on a Football Friday, talking about these high school games from all different angles, a little bit different type of pre-game and post-game and informational shows. We give you a different viewpoint there, a little point spread, a little bit more intrigue there, maybe some lunch talk, some mascot talk, some things that may fly under the radar from your regular programming. So anyway, thanks for joining us here. Better's Last Stand. We roll on here with more college football action as we get ready to take you, actually the first of the college football action. We didn't talk about college football yet, but briefly we did in the Colorado and then the ticket counts and things like that. But we're going to jump into the card here. Also, if you're interested in Mountain East football, that kicked off Thursday night as well. So you had West Liberty in action. You had Wheeling University in action. And we have Mountain East futures up over at the sportsbook at Wheeling Island Hotel, Casino, and Racetrack. So if you want to go over to the sportsbook there and you want to play the University of Charleston to win the league, you can do that. Or you want to play them over their win total, you can do that. You want to play West Liberty over theirs or under theirs, you can, or Wheeling University. We got all the teams available over there. So stop on over and see us. University of Charleston, a plus 225 favorite to win the Mountain East this year, followed by Frostburg at 3-1, UNC Pembroke at plus 450, Fairmont State at plus 750, Wheeling University 15-1, Glenville State 17-1, West Virginia State comes in at 27-1, West Liberty at 38-1, Concord 50-1, and West Virginia Wesleyan 175-1, which really could be about 175,000-1. Win totals, University of Charleston, 9.5 is their posted win total. Frostburg win total, 8.5. UNC Pembroke, 7.5. Fairmont State, 6.5. Wheeling University, 6.5. Glenville, 5.5. West Virginia State, 5.5. West Liberty, 4.5. Concord, 3.5. And West Virginia Wesleyan, 1.5. You can bet over or under any of those should you choose to stop over at Wheeling Island Hotel Casino Racetrack. Recapping a few of our future bets, just in case, you still got a little bit of time here. If you haven't checked out the Twitter or the X page, as they call it now, BLS_PRP is where you want to be. PineRoomStudios.com, our website. You can see lots of information on there. WatchdogNetwork.com. You got all kinds of different resources that you need to be ready to have it at the stroke of a button or right at the tips of your fingers all this football season. But we'll go through my college plays here one last time before the season starts. In the SEC, we're going with Alabama over 9.5 victories. We're going to go under 9.5 victories for LSU. We're going to go Oklahoma over 7.5 victories. And we're going to go Florida under 5 wins for the Florida Gators. In the Big Ten, Wisconsin over 6.5 wins. Nebraska over 6.5 wins. Rutgers over 6 wins. Minnesota over 5 wins. And our best bet in the Big Ten, it'll be the Indiana Hoosiers over 5 victories for the season. My best bet in the SEC was Florida under 5, too. So, moving along, ACC, lean Miami over 9, but you know I'm a Miami fan, so you don't have to listen to me on that one. North Carolina under 7.5. California Golden Bears over 5.5 victories. Like that one a lot. No official play on Pitt. I lean to the under Pitt, 5.5, but no official play. Duke under 6. Wake Forest under 4.5. And then my best bet in the ACC, yes, this is weird, the Atlantic Coast Conference, will be Stanford over 3.5. Big 12 action. Kansas State, don't have a strong play on this one. I lean a little bit to the under here. I see it's 10 some places. If you find 10, I'd definitely say under because I think they might win 9, but no official play. And then my college football future best bet of the year, the Utah Utes over 9.5. It's my best bet to make the playoff as well and to win the Big 12. I think you got 3 different great bets there. But the over 9.5, I think, is an absolute slam dunk. That is my college football Pine Room Bettors Last Stand Watchdog bet of the year for college football. So enjoy that one. Oklahoma State over 8 victories also in the Big 12. I'm leaning West Virginia under 2. I'd hate to be a hater here, but I just don't think they're going to be able to win more than 6. So I think they win exactly 6, so that would cash the bet for the under. So lean West Virginia under, lean Colorado under, but I'm not getting involved with them. Cincinnati, really like them, over 5.5. Got a very good home schedule and are very good at home. So we'll be playing those. Other teams from various conferences, we're going with Liberty over 10.5. They got the easiest schedule in college football. They got to run the table to make the playoff if they have any shot. Memphis over 9, got a lot of transfers, should be pretty talented. USF, South Florida over 7 wins. East Carolina over 5.5 wins. Colorado State over 6 wins. Akron, who ironically is getting 50 points this week, but that doesn't matter. That's not going to be one of the games I expect them to win. Akron over 3.5. Kennesaw State Owls. That's a team you should keep an eye on. A lot of people aren't going to know them. They're going to think they're, oh, this is his D2 school. This team stinks. They're not going to be as bad as you think. So look for the Kennesaw State Owls to maybe get some under-the-radar love from some people who may know a little bit more about it than you and me even. Kennesaw State, to me, will be a team that gets undervalued all season long in the point spread. So take a shot with them over the 2.5. And they're going to get the 3. And then UConn over 4.5 wins. That brings us to the NFL. I'll recap these ones as well as we head into an open week here before next week kicks off the NFL season next Thursday with the Chiefs and the Ravens, followed by the Eagles and Packers in Brazil. So we talked to Mike Florio about that. NBC Sports will be carrying those games as well as the Sunday night game. So those guys very, very busy Again, check out Mike at thepineroomstudios.com. You can see the or listen to the radio replay on the website. All right, here's my future bets for the NFL. In the AFC East, the Bills over 9.5 and to win the division. The Jets under 9.5. Miami under 9.5 and New England over 4.5. I know that one is probably very unpopular. Most people across the national media and even professional sports bettors are pounding the New England Patriots under. I don't see it that way. I think there's a lot of bad teams in the NFL, and I think they'll eventually be able to win a few games, and I wouldn't be surprised if they win week one. In the AFC North, starting to worry about this bet a tad, but every time that people think the Steelers suck, they end up being good, and it would make me so happy if I lose this bet. I'll be very willing to lose it. Pittsburgh over 8.5, but they are my pick to win the division. I think they win it. I think you have the Browns finishing second, but a small lean to the Browns under there. Things could go south with them. No play on the Ravens, and then I like Cincinnati under 10.5. You know that. I think they finish in last place. I think they win 6-7 games tops in the AFC North. Houston, no play on them in the AFC South. I like Jacksonville to win this division. I like Jacksonville to make the playoffs. I like Jacksonville to make the conference championship game. I think they have a big bounce back year. I think they're too good to be as bad as they've been. I have no faith in the Colts. Houston's very, very good. Will Stroud have a little bit of a sophomore setback? Possibly. They're going to be very good, though. But I like Jacksonville to have a little resurgence here. And they got a little rivalry with Houston going. Indianapolis is awful. Richardson is not an NFL quarterback. He's an athlete. He's not a quarterback. They're not going to be able to win any big games. So that means they're not a factor. Tennessee, no play. I think they'll win right around 5 or 6, maybe even 7. I don't think they'll be as bad as everybody thinks, but I don't think they'll be very good. Kansas City, pick in the West, the AFC West. They'll go over 11.5, so I'm going to go over 11.5 there. Going to go with the Chargers over 8.5. Think they're on their way. Harbaugh's done a good job getting them ready. I think he's going to give them a lot of experience, and I would expect next year they may have a shot, and we even talked to Mike about this, Mike Florio. They may contend with the Chiefs next year. Las Vegas, no real play on them. Talented roster, I guess, but the quarterback, a question, just don't know. A lot of people love Denver here. I don't get it. I just don't get it. Bo Nix, I was never a fan of him in college. Like, he's okay, but not to me a pro quarterback. And I think Sean Payton's the most overrated coach ever. I've said it a million times. Denver under 5.5. I like that play quite a bit. In the NFC East, Philadelphia is my pick to win the division. I got no play on their win total, no play on Dallas's win total. Lean under with the Giants. They should be very, very bad. And I like the Redskins over 6.5. I think they're going to be a lot better. Jaden Daniels is going to make some exciting plays. He can pass from the pocket, which a lot of these other athletic guys can't do. And that's why he is actually ready, like C.J. Stroud. Stroud, not a huge runner, but he can stay in the pocket and make the reads he needs to make and then escape at the very last second if he has to. Instead of one read, Justin Fields, tuck it and run. One read, Anthony Richardson, tuck it and run. Those guys aren't going to ever win games. This guy can win games. I think Washington, a team on the mend and could be getting better. Detroit in the North Division of the NFC, over 10.5. They are my division pick as well. I think they're very, very stable. Goff, again, we talked about him receiving a lot of attention for MVP. Can they handle the pressure? That would be the only concern that I would have. Green Bay, no real play. I think they'll be right around 9 or 10 wins. Still not sold on Jordan Love. I think he's maybe a little better than I gave him credit for, but I'm still not certain that he's great. Had some weird games last year where if you go back and look at him, he had some no-show games, so that worries me. Bears under, that's my best bet in the NFC North and probably in the whole NFC. The too much hype for this team. There's too much pressure. Caleb Williams will probably be pretty good down the road. They got a lot of good players on offense, but, man, there's a lot of pressure on this team. Winning 9 games isn't going to be easy when you got to play Green Bay and Detroit 2 times. So I'm passing on the Bears. I'm going way under on their win total. I think they might win 6 or 7. Not sure they're even a playoff team here, although they're getting better. Minnesota, a mess right now. Probably just a punt year for them, under 6.5. Into the South, I'm on Cooley's Bucks. Over 8.5 here. I think they win at least 9, probably 10. I think they win this division. Atlanta getting a lot of love. They've upgraded their roster a lot. Got Kirk Cousins. A lot of pressure here, but Atlanta's a loser franchise. And can they actually win games? I don't know. They may have the best talent on paper in 8 out of 10, their first 10 games, but they might only win 5 of them. So I just don't have a lot of faith in Atlanta. I like what they did in the offseason, but is it enough? Is it enough to actually win on Sunday? I'm saying no. So we're going with the Bucks to win the division. We're going to Bucks over 8.5. And I like that play quite a bit. But I like this one better. New Orleans under 7.5. I think they'll be the worst team in the league this year. I think New Orleans wins 4 games probably, And I don't think this is going to be a year where you're going to have a team that only has one win. I think you'll have maybe even four, have three or four victories, and New Orleans will probably be one of those. Carolina, a team that a lot of people were saying would be one of those, I disagree. I think this team's improved. I think Bryce Young's improved. I think they have a little bit different mentality coming into the second year of a new regime. I like what I'm seeing out of them right now in their lead up to the season. I think the people are going to overlook this team. And if you go back and check it out, their defense wasn't that terrible. They kept them in games last year. And Young was just so bad, and they just look so confused on offense. They had nothing going. They bring in a couple guys that are motivated, Deontay Johnson. I believe they have Adam Thielen. So they have some guys that could lead by example enough to make this team a little bit better. I would not be totally stunned if they somehow won this division. I really, really wouldn't. Say Baker Mayfield goes down and Tampa can only get to 7 or 8 wins, it wouldn't shock me if Carolina won 8 games and had a shot of winning this division. I know that sounds silly, but I really do like them over the 4.5. I think they'll win 5 games minimum, and I really think they'll win more like 6 at the very, very least. So I'm high on Carolina. I know I'm one of the few on them, but hey, somebody's got to go worse the first this year, and it damn sure ain't going to be Cincinnati. So we're going to say Carolina. Into the West we go. San Francisco, 11.5 is their win total. I have no criticisms of San Fran. I have no excitement too much about San Francisco. They got some weird things going on in their camp right now. This is kind of like the window's closing for them. Brock Purdy's on his final year of his rookie deal. I don't know. Something's unsettling about them, but they're still good enough. They're going to win at least 11 games, probably 10 or 11. Think they probably win a division, but this division is really, really good. In my opinion, best division in the league from top to bottom, and we'll get to the team that I like to win this division, the Los Angeles Rams, over 6.5. Like them a lot. I think they have a really good shot of winning this division along with Seattle, and I like Seattle over 7.5. I think these teams are going to really fare well outside of the division, and they're going to beat up on each other a little bit in the division. So that works against us a little bit when you're playing multiple teams from the same division on win total bets. But if they take care of business outside of it, I think you're going to like what you see. So Seattle got a new coach, good young mind from the Ravens. And then you got L.A., who has a good coach, a really, really good Hall of Fame-level quarterback, and it got, you know, guys that have won. So I'm very, very, very bullish on the Los Angeles Rams and the Seattle Seahawks, and I really like Arizona. I think Arizona is going to stun some people this year. We saw what Murray can do when he's healthy. He's got some weapons on offense. They got some wide receivers now. They add Harrison. They got McBride, the tight end. Connor as a running, I mean, not that these guys are great. Their defense is getting slept on really badly. Can they be a little better than people think? All it will take for them to be average, and this team will win some games. So I like Arizona over their 5.5 win total. I think they can definitely get to 6 wins here, and I think that's a really, really good division. So teams that I think will make the playoffs, the Rams at even money, the Jags at plus 130, the Seahawks at plus 180, the Steelers at plus 185, outside shot with the Chargers at plus 110 to miss the playoffs, the Bears, even money, to miss the playoffs, the Bengals, plus 205. You can't beat that. I just don't see it with the Bengals. I just don't think their team's very good. And Ja'Marr Chase hasn't even practiced all of training camp. And I know him and Burrow got chemistry, and that's really the only thing that keeps the Bengals as being a dangerous team ever is Ja'Marr Chase. If he's not out there, they're nothing, and they won't be anything. They haven't made enough of an attempt to make their line better and their defense better. I just don't love anything about Cincinnati. It's not like I hate the city. I never hated that team. I just don't think that the roster is what it is and the coach is not what it is, and I don't understand why people keep talking about it. It's just the same thing as why they keep saying Justin Fields should start in Pittsburgh. What has he ever done that would prove that he deserves to start as a quarterback in the NFL? He's done nothing but fumble and throw interceptions. Yeah, he's ran for some yards, but it's translated into very few victories, and that's what I have a running back for. If he wants to do that, change positions. Division winners, again, I think the Rams at plus 330, the Jags at plus 275, the Bucks at plus $3, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Panthers got there. Buffalo plus 170, the Steelers were as high as 9-1 when I wrote this up. That's been a while ago. They're probably even higher now. That is absurd to me in a division like that, that they would be 9-1, which is 4 teams. The Lions at plus 150, and then the Chiefs, I wouldn't play this one, minus 230. I don't like to give out bets like that are huge minus prices, but Chiefs are the team to beat in the West. All right, we got a couple minutes left. Let's fly through these college games. Let's get ready right now on Friday night. Interesting game here. Oklahoma Sooners laying 42.5 now against the Temple Owls. I'm going to go with the first quarter in this one. I'm going to take the Sooners. -10.5 in the first quarter against the Temple Owls. That is tonight. Western Michigan, Wisconsin also tonight. Some sharp money coming in on the over in this game. It's a 56.5 point total. We're going to go over the 56.5 in Wisconsin and Western Michigan. TCU and Stanford, also a Friday night game. Stanford, if you remember, is a team that I really liked here in college football this year. They're my ACC best bet over their win total. We're going to go with the Cardinal plus the 10 at home against the TCU Horned Frogs. Saturday's games, Clemson at Georgia. This is actually playing at a neutral at the Falcons field. It'll be Georgia -13, total 48.5. Couldn't find a team total yet on Clemson, but I'm interested in the under there. I also think Georgia pulls away late here. And I will tell you that I think the quarterback play in this game is going to be vastly in favor of Georgia. Carson Beck got really good last year down the stretch. Like him a lot. Look for some of his props maybe for some overs, some touchdown passes, and things like that. But I think Clemson not good enough to hang with Georgia late, and Georgia pulls away. Connecticut at Maryland, another game I'm interested in. Maryland -20.5. I saw some 21s. If you can get to 21, definitely take it. But I like UConn, even plus two touchdowns. So take the Huskies plus the points. Penn State, West Virginia, everybody I know is on the Mountaineers here. I'm hearing it from the national side of things. Franklin can't win. Franklin can't do this. Well, to me, this isn't a big game. This isn't Ohio State. This isn't Michigan. This isn't a Rose Bowl. This is West Virginia, for God's sakes. I mean, yeah, they beat some teams every once in a while down in Morgantown, but please. I'm not recommending Penn State here, but it won't surprise me if Penn State wins this game comfortably. I do like the under in this game. That's where I'm going to go. I think Penn State stymies West Virginia, and I think the Mountaineers struggle to get over 20 points, and I think Penn State wins the game. And I think you could look at some Mountaineer team totals under. My best bet of the week in college football, week number one, it'll be the Virginia Tech Hokies. The hated Hokies. I can't stand this program. I hate them. They play at Vanderbilt, -13.5 in this game, total 50.5. I am on Virginia Tech. I think they hammer Vanderbilt. Virginia Tech, an improving team. They got a lot of guys back from last year. They got some questionable issues with their personnel this week, I heard. Maybe some guys in trouble. I'm not that worried about it, though. Vanderbilt, it's going to take a while for them to get their program back up to par. Cincinnati and Towson, another game, 2:30 kick on Saturday. Take the Bearcats -30.5 against Towson at home. Cincinnati, very good at home. Florida International heads to the Indiana Hoosiers. Indiana -21. Will be taking the Hoosiers minus the points. I think the Hoosiers are going to be a pretty good team, as you heard me talk about in the Big Ten, one of the teams that I like a lot in that conference. UMass, the Minutemen, they host the Eastern Michigan Eagles. It'll be UMass -1.5, the total 49. I'm going to go with UMass. Think they win this game. A little sharp money coming in on them. I already liked them, and then I saw some of the pros were betting it, so I feel a little bit better about it. So we're going to go with UMass money line. -125, -1.5 on the point spread, whatever you prefer. Maybe even look at an alternate there, win by 6 or something like that. Ohio at Syracuse. This is one I don't have a play on this, but Syracuse opened 14.5 all the way up to 17.5. Sharp money showing on Syracuse. Maybe that's a side you want to be on. I don't trust it yet. Miami, -3, -2.5 now at the Swamp of Florida. I lean to the Hurricanes, but man, Miami's offensive line could cost them in this game. It's going to be a loud environment, some new guys. But they got Damian Martinez, an exceptional running back. If Miami runs the ball well and controls the clock in this game, I think they pull away and win this game pretty handily. They are the better team, but who knows? Colorado State at Texas. A lot of people on Colorado State here from the public standpoint. So maybe Texas a little bit of lean here with the Texas team losing their two running backs. Maybe people are scared about them. Colorado State, I think, is going to be in a good team. I even have their win total over, but maybe Texas is the right side here. Texas gets going, things can happen. Pros versus Joe game. UTEP at Nebraska. It will be Nebraska -27.5, the total 49. UTEP is the public side. Nebraska is the sharp side. So do with that what you will. And then if I didn't mention, Texas is -32.5 against Colorado State. Boise State at Georgia Southern. That game started out Boise State -10. Out up to 13. A lot of money coming in on Boise State. Don't have an official play there for me. South Carolina hosts Old Dominion. South Carolina opened this game -17. Now up to 21. The total 52.5. Sharp money showing on South Carolina. I don't have enough conviction to make a play in that game either, but I thought that the line move was interesting. Nevada at Troy. Troy -9.5. The total 45.5. Opened 15.5, Troy, down to 9.5. That's an incredibly weird run there. Nevada obviously played pretty good last week, so people jumping on board with Nevada, might be time to jump back in on Troy. Alabama hosts Western Kentucky. Alabama minus 31, total 60.5. I like this game over. I think both these teams can score a little bit. Western Kentucky, decent offensive program. I like Alabama in the first quarter, too. I know that bet got over bet a couple years ago. But 7.5, I think they can score a couple times. DeBoer's going to want to make a little statement there early on, replacing Nick Saban. So we'll go with Bama first quarter, minus 7.5 and over 60.5 in that one. Texas A&M and Notre Dame. This is a game drawing a ton of national action. 7:30, ESPN. Or I'm sorry, it's on ABC. Same affiliate. A&M now minus 3, open 1. I think Notre Dame's the better team here, but everybody's betting Notre Dame that I see, so that worries me. I'll probably pass on the game, but be pulling for the Irish. Texas A&M's never won anything. That 12th man stuff, give me a break with that. They doesn't win any games for them. I mean, who do they beat at home all the time that the 12th man is so valuable? I don't understand it. I don't understand that program. They have all this this persona about them that they're good and that they're special and they're elite. They're not. They're terrible. They've never been good in my lifetime. They've never been good in anybody listening to this radio show's lifetime. So pass on Texas A&M. Go Irish. UCLA at Hawaii. It'll be UCLA minus 14 now. That opened 17. Down to 14 now. Interesting because Hawaii didn't look very good. So don't know what to expect from UCLA. They're kind of a wild card. Kentucky will host Southern Miss. Kentucky opened 24, now up to 28. I like this game under. That's where I'm going to go. Kentucky defense plays well at home. Southern Miss, very bad team, and they really struggle to move the ball. We'll go under 50.5 in Kentucky and Southern Miss. James Madison at the Charlotte 49ers. It'll be JMU, minus 7 on the road. Total 51 in this game. I like the over. I think this could be an old-fashioned shootout with the team that has the ball last, maybe winning it. So we'll go over 51. Georgia State at Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech off the great win against against Florida State in Dublin, that is. I was thinking Irish, so there you go. But they beat Florida State handily. They were the better team. They ran the ball down their throats. Sharp money on Georgia Tech here early, 21.5. I think that could be good. I think Georgia Tech's going to be a tough team if they're not jet-lagged. So that would scare me a little bit. New Mexico and Arizona. New Mexico also played a pretty good game, blew it late. They're catching 30 from Arizona on the road. Public all over New Mexico after that performance. I would be leaning Arizona there. If that number keeps going down, I would jump all over the Wildcats. And then finishing it up on Sunday and Monday, LSU and USC doing battle on Sunday evening at 7:30. It'll be LSU minus the 4, 63.5 the total there. I like USC in the game. Public on LSU. Lot to replace for LSU. Jaden Daniels, boy, that's quite a player to have to replace. Neither team plays defense, so you might just want to bet the over here and just hope for lots of scoring. Neither coach really has a great defense at this point. But Brian Kelly's probably at least trying to improve his. I'm not sure Lincoln Riley even cares. And then Boston College, Florida State. Don't know about this one. Maybe the under, little jet lag, little hangover for Florida State. Bad performance. DJ Uiagalelei under pressure already. Maybe under. They're catching, BC's catching 17, total 50.5. I lean to the under in that one. I think that's probably the most sensible play of those. All right, well, that's going to do it for us. Hope you enjoyed Bettors Last Stand, show number 98. This is the second segment. For those of you listening to the full podcast, wherever you listen to your podcast or on the Pine Room Studios YouTube page, you can continue with us as we'll have Sam the Man here talking racing and pirate baseball after the break. But that'll do it for us here on the Watchdog Network. Enjoy the pregame show leading you up to Wheeling Park in Parkersburg South here on a Football Friday on the Watchdog, presented by Gumby's and Jill's Gentleman's Club. We will see you next week on the Bettors Last Stand Watchdog Edition. Until then, best of luck during college football week one in all your wagers.
Reminder, this show is for informational and entertainment purposes only. All wagering activities should only be conducted by those 21 years of age or older and within the confines of federal, state, and local law. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, contact 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. All right, men, load the cannons and hold the line. You're listening to Bettors Last Stand.
All right, welcome back in Bettors Last Stand, show number 98. If you flipped over from the Watchdog broadcast to listen to the podcast version of this. We're now joined by Sam the Man from Upper St. Clair, a diehard Pirate fan, and he's nearly at his death right now. We'll start with that. We're going to talk racing, the more pleasant things, but we got to start with the Pirates again. I thought we were going to talk about last night's miserable game and then the night before that's miserable game, but today may take the cake, blowing a huge lead. Bednar, among others, involved in this, and then the team just absolutely quit in the ninth inning, lose the game 14-10 after leading. What was their big? They were up 10-5 at one point. I know that.
Matt, they were up 10-3 in the sixth inning.
It was 10-3, okay.
10-3.
Inexcusable.
Right when Jared texted me, I said, it ain't over, buddy.
Yeah, Shelty's got to go. Matter of fact, I'd fire him tonight. Even if it's not his fault all the way, and I don't like the guy at all, but like I can't blame him for all this. This team is completely quit, but they gotta shake it up here because they're gonna finish with a worse record than last year, and it's not even gonna be close. And Skeens, again, we blow a terrible performance. So just a sick display. What are your thoughts?
Where do I even start? We'll start with the series of what I just watched. Matt, we just pitched Keller, Jones, Skeens.
This trio,
the aces that are going to carry this organization to the promised land. They got their fucking ass kicked these last three games. They made the team look way better than they are. The Cubs are not what these last three games, you know, show. But I mean, I don't even know where my frustration lies. I've been saying Shelton needs to go. Now, this whole fucking shortstop thing is just another thing to add to this list of like, IKF is not a everyday shortstop.
No, he is
he's
not.
He is a utility player.
Yes, he is.
The proof of that this was a bad choice, Matt. Did you see the game last night?
Yes.
Did you see the bang bang play in the first inning that IKF threw? That would have been he would have been out by three steps if O'Neill Cruz fielded.
I know.
You just
can't take a guy that talented with an arm like that out of shortstop when he's never played any other position before. And then replace him with a guy who, like you said, is a utility player. It is beyond belief. I think they tried to lose on purpose. I'm convinced of it.
No, you're right. And they got Billy Cook from your Orioles at the deadline. And Billy Cook is dominating AAA. I mean, he's hitting in the 300s.
Right.
He's had like four grand slams. And they are not calling this guy up. And now, Matt, now there's pretty much nowhere for him to play. Because now you've moved a shortstop to center field that does not play the outfield. Brian Reynolds will be on the corner and then maybe throw him in right. I don't know. What about Brian De La Cruz? We have him for a couple more years.
Yeah,
so now
he's actually shown some signs of improvement, De La Cruz. He's been a little better to the point where I feel like he's going to be the least of the problems. Like just have him in right field next year, opening day. There could be worse situations. But I just can't get over this with Cruz. I just can't believe Major League Baseball teams do this kind of stuff. Like, this is not a common thing. In the city of Pittsburgh, the fans are so stupid. They think, like, moving positions like this is something that's easy. Like, it's just not going to be easy for a guy that struggles to concentrate anyway. And now, you know, the guy's actually hitting a little bit right now. And now you got him worried about having to move positions. He's an elite talent. You need him at shortstop. You don't have a better shortstop in the system. IKF's not the answer. But maybe at some point, Sam, do you look in the mirror that this team never does and say, boy, Ke'Bryan Hayes, his development has been stymied. Henry Davis's development has been stymied. And now O'Neill Cruz's development has been stymied. Boy, I wonder what the common factor is in all this. Well, it is. It's the Pittsburgh fucking Pirates. Like, do they ever take accountability for anything?
No, I'm honestly not mad at the players. They show up. They show up and they try. They do try. It's Charrington, it's the owner, it's Shelton, it's everybody that sits in air conditioning and makes decisions for the team on the field. They have no clue and have had no clue since the day that Derek Shelton accepted this job of what we're going to do. They have no plan. It's so evident. Matt, we were 56-54. And they were all excited on the radio. Oh, they got these, you know, De La Cruz, Kalefa, we made trades. And like I told you last night, I may have been Jared, I don't know. Derek Shelton was on the radio talking about this guy they just DFA'd that he can tell everybody
he
picks in the big leagues.
Yeah.
Drew Maggie 2.0.
Great. Just what everybody wants to hear.
Yeah, ridiculous. Now, how about this? We didn't even touch on this. I mean, this could go on. We could talk about this for an hour, but we got to end it after this because it just frustrates us both. Oh, Rowdy Tellez, now you're your ace reliever. What is Matt, this?
It's a joke. That's what I mean. It gets to the point where we're back to just minor leagues. We think it's so funny and cute that fucking Big 44 is on the mound. Well, he's only out there.
Yeah.
Right, and we're getting our ass kicked. We don't want to see Rowdy Tellez pitching. It isn't funny. It's not fun anymore.
Oh, and then one more thing. How about the 8 stolen bases? I mean, the Cubs definitely studied that. There's no doubt about it. But the Pirates did nothing to put up a fight. Like they were. You said it. The Cubs are not even very good, but the Cubs smelled blood in this series. They knew every single time that they were out there hitting that they had a chance. If they put pressure on the Pirates would eventually collapse. And that's how the Cubs got a huge sweep in games that they needed to. And now they're actually a playoff contender. Now they're not very good.
No, but you're right. I think they saw like, oh my God, these guys aren't doing anything. And they just piled it on over and over and over. And David Bednar, get the hell out of town. Get out of town, man.
It's enough's enough with him. I mean, my God. I mean, what are they doing? It's over. It's over, John.
It's over.
Him.
I got an Astros hat on. It's over.
Yeah, go. Yeah. And hey, by the way, I like the new setup, minus the pirate hats. You know, that's sad. They should have tears running down out of them.
They should be fucking on fire is what they should be.
But it looks good.
You can't see this here, these cards. This is a Joey Bart card. That's a Vince Velasquez card. That's a Vogelback card. And a Colin Selby rookie card.
I think Vogelback should be reacquired for next year.
I agree. We'll fucking put him on the mound.
Yeah, him and Rowdy can switch off.
It's a total shame.
Enough of that misery. God, that's just disgusting that's how bad it's fallen. All right, on to some more pleasant things. You nailed the winner in the F1 race. As Lando Norris comes home victorious, leads 51 laps at the Dutch Grand Prix. Max Verstappen can't three-peat at his home event. I'm sure he was a little ticked off there. He led 17 laps, thought Lando might be in trouble, but Lando had the better car, no question about it. And another strong performance for McLaren. Well, I got to say, the Ferraris were a team that interested me last week. The double top six cashes for me with the Ferraris. I thought they ran pretty well. Surprisingly, Piastri solid again. Mercedes, not their best this week. What were your thoughts from the Dutch Grand Prix?
Yeah, I was a little disappointed to see, the Lewis momentum fall off. But I'm very excited that McLaren just went in there and said, hey, we're still here. The brake did nothing. It didn't change us at all. And they're ready to go. I really think that Max may not win the title.
I mean, they're tracking him down right now. Now, if he keeps getting P2s and things like that, then maybe he can. But like, if he has a couple like DNFs or something goes wrong for him, then you're right. Because I think he might still be able to win one more race. But I don't know.
Definitely.
These guys are putting pressure on him right now. And who would have thought now Red Bull backed into a corner now where you have these other teams all with some momentum right now. Mercedes gives a little bit of it back. But Ferrari has a little momentum now going in. And McLaren, they are the team to beat heading into the Italian Grand Prix this week at Monza. Well, it's hard to imagine. We say it every week, but when Verstappen is not installed as the favorite anymore, it is just amazing to keep reading. Lando Norris plus 105, your favorite, followed by Verstappen at plus 275, Piastri 575. I thought that the Mercedes looked like they could possibly have a bounce back at this race, and I like them. I actually like them a tad bit better than the McLarens. This hasn't been one of the best tracks for the McLarens in recent years. Now that everything's different now because they've really mastered something here. But I like Mercedes and Ferrari to both be strong this week, and we'll see what Max can do to try to hold them off. What do you think?
Yeah, I actually agree because the numbers said that McLaren struggles. You know, I don't know if this is one of those things that even though they've been dominant, is it in their head that they know they struggle here?
Right.
You know,
right.
It's like the guy that pitches, even if you're hitting hot, it's like, man, I can't hit this guy. Like,
yes,
I don't know. But Ferrari, I'm leaning towards a good finish, but I have in quotate or, you know, with stars here that they scare me. I mean, Ferrari.
Yeah, well, I mean, they always
me.
Do. I mean,
they always do. But
they're actually do. And now that you say that and, you know, like they ran pretty well last week, outperformed what they thought they would do. So now you know what's going to happen. Signs will DNF or Charles Leclerc's steering wheel will fall off or something.
Right. Yeah, no, you're right.
Anything
you're right.
Can happen with them.
So it's like I want them to finish well, but one of those two is going to not finish this race.
I think that's probably a pretty safe assumption. I think the other one could be on the podium, but one may DNF. All right. Both Mercedes around 12, 13 to 1. Who interests you more, Lando or Lewis? Or I'm sorry, George or Lewis?
I want to go Lewis, but something's telling me that George is. I don't know. George needs a good run because he's the next guy, you know, carrying this team in the future. So he needs to get back to being the number one Mercedes driver.
Yeah, I have a small lean to George this week. I think he's ran well at this track before, like you said. Maybe a little confidence goes into his mind leading in. Not that Lewis has been bad, so I have a slight lean to George in this, and I think he may be a podium finish for me this week alongside Verstappen, and then probably one of the McLarens if they can get it together. I'm a little bit worried about them, and then possibly a Ferrari. Where did you end up ultimately with your race winner?
Race winner? I'm going with another McLaren, Matt.
Oh,
I'm doing it. I'm doing it because selfishly, I just want to see them get over the hump. I want them to be honestly the number one team that like everyone go after McLaren.
Okay, yeah, I like it.
I don't know, Matt. I don't know. I think
they're
onto something.
Do you have a preference? Do you think it's Lando's or does Piastri get in the mix?
No, I think it's Lando. I think Lando is separating himself into a top tier driver in this second half of the season.
All right. Well, I like the pick. I'm going to give a slight lean to George Russell in this matchup, along with Max Verstappen. And then I'm a little concerned about the McLarens, but it wouldn't surprise me if they were able to win again. So anybody under the radar that you like? Alex Albon?
Give me Albon. He's got a new teammate, fresh start.
Yes.
You know, he should have had a new teammate a while ago.
Nope,
I don't know about Alonso. I have Alonso with question marks because I just don't know, man. What happened to him?
Yeah, he's just.
What happened to that whole team?
He's really not had a very good year.
No.
Yeah, terrible. You're right. The team that had momentum quite a bit last year has really suffered this year. Sergio Perez in the top six finally again.
How about that? I know.
Small victories for Red Bull, I guess. Yeah, you'll in the manufacturer's chase. I don't know. He's just basically dead wood out there driving around. So should be another good one, though. Italian Grand Prix, 9 a.m. on Sunday. Looking forward to that one. Let's stay in open wheels. I didn't realize until you messaged me that they're actually doing a doubleheader at the Milwaukee Mile. Now, they haven't raced at the Milwaukee Mile in almost 10 years, which I always liked this track. And it's been on the Xfinity circuit for quite a while. And then I remember the open wheel guys being there, too. I like it. I think it's a cool track, and I'm looking forward to it, and it's been a long, long time. But let's recap last week's race at Portland. Will Power gets it done. He leads 101 laps. He was dominating in this race. Our guy, Scott Dixon, as we said last week, we both picked him. What could go wrong, and it went wrong real fast. A vicious crash. That's not something that I'd want to have to do very often, but bad luck for him. Will Power gets it done. Pillow in second, Newgarden third. Scott McLaughlin, not his best effort. Graham Rahal holds on to a top 10 for me. Overall, I thought this was a relatively uneventful race. It was pretty clear Will Power was the guy to beat.
Yeah, it was definitely uneventful. We should have known. We even said it. We said, what could go wrong? I said, nothing. Nothing's going to go wrong. First lap, done.
Poor Scott.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, doesn't even complete one lap.
Nope, not one. Couldn't get one fucking trip around the circuit, Matt.
I mean, Stingray Raw would even complete a few. Come on, he got 18th place again. So
I know he's all right.
Moving on to the Milwaukee Mile again. There's not a lot of things we can go off of a recent form, but I will say this: Scott Dixon is a past winner here, and
yes, he is.
This guy has been racing for a long time. He led 27 laps, and some of the names that he beat that day. Oh, Graham Rahal was in the race as well, so maybe worth a look there from at least track experience. But Dario Franchitti, Danica Patrick, Marco Andretti. Let's see who else. Dan Weldon, RIP. Oh, man. Elio Castroneves, Ryan Hunter Ray, Ed Carpenter, Paul Tracy, the legendary Paul Tracy.
Paul Tracy.
Tony Kanaan. I mean, listen to those. There's some Hall of Famers there. That was the guys that were racing the last time we were at the Milwaukee Mile. We'll be there for 2 days. And I'm actually a little bit excited about watching this there. So I don't know, Sam. I don't really have a whole lot of insight other than if I would say with just track history, Scott Dixon and Graham Rahal are guys you want to keep an eye on. What are you thinking?
Matt, I have two names written on my card, and it's Scott Dixon and Graham Rahal. I don't know what to go off of.
So they're both doomed, and they're
both
going
to DNF. They're both going to DNF. There's nothing to go off of other than Scott Dixon had a bad, bad race. His Ganassi teammate dominated, and he doesn't like that. He's the Iceman.
Yes.
I think it's Scott Dixon's name written all over it.
And I do think actually Scott McLaughlin will be a contender here. This is a track that I think would suit his driving skills pretty good. So of the guys who have not seen this track in regular action, I would say he would be a guy worth taking a peek at. And he can't ever really go wrong with Newgarden because he probably has turbo boosters in his car that nobody else has. So why discount him?
Yeah, no, you're right.
So we'll see what happens at qualifying. But ultimately, I couldn't get off of Dixon. And let's hope he's able to rebound after that terrible crash and can get himself into the victory circle.
I cannot believe we're going to do this 2 weeks in a row.
Poor Scott, man. We're going to be hearing from his attorney here soon.
I bet you the hair on his neck just stood up. He probably said, oh, shit.
Yeah, he had to tighten up the neck collar after last week. All right, well, let's talk about more crashes. Let's go.
Oh, my God.
400 recap here. There were several times in this race where I thought I was done with my picks, and then there was times where I thought, oh, my, I actually have a chance again. I was so frustrated about this. I stayed up and watched this, and I had to work the next day, and I couldn't get to sleep afterwards because my adrenaline was going, and I was pissed off. But I was kind of happy that Harrison Burton won, but, like, it was just a typical Daytona ending here. Guys making weird decisions, some strange wrecks. I mean, you got guys going upside down. You got guys who would have went upside down violently had they still had the grass in the infield. I mean, there was a lot of things in play here. You get the overtime. You get Kyle Busch knocking on the door trying to get in the playoffs. So many different storylines. Brad Keselowski gets a penalty, a shitty call in my opinion, and then has a chance late to come back and win and gets wrecked. And Ty Gibbs escapes disaster and hangs in the top five. I don't know, Sam, what interested you most about this race? There's so many things to discuss.
Yeah, there was a lot of shit that happened. I would say I'd start with Harrison Burton, honestly. I mean, I should have actually thought way better about this, because once those wrecks happen, man, those guys, those sleepers all the way at the bottom, Matt, they are the ones to fucking play.
Oh, yeah.
Dude.
Oh, yeah. Justin Haley was the guy that I had, and he was right. He had a good car.
I know. It makes too much sense.
Yep.
Survival of the fittest. That wreck took out, what was it, 18 cars?
Yeah. Yeah.
18
and there was
cars.
Guys that were involved. I think they did a graphic late in the race, and even our boy Lee Diffie was laughing about it. It was easier to put up who wasn't involved in a crash. It was like five guys throughout the night. And some of the guys involved in multiple ones. And then how about Daniel Suarez, who literally almost burned to death on pit road?
Yeah. Literally, Denny Hamlin tried to take him out. That was crazy. That was actually pretty scary.
Very, because the car was melting, and he didn't even really know how bad it was, and they're like trying to get him out. I mean, that was. I've never seen a car melt like that that quickly. That was scary stuff. I don't know where we go from here. It was a chaotic race. Obviously, you had a lot of different leaders, lots of action. We're in our last week leading up to the playoffs. You have guys fighting it out right now. Truex probably in. Chastain, Gibbs, Buescher, Bubba. And then there's guys like Briscoe and Bush who would have to win to get in. I don't know. What are your thoughts this week as we head to Darlington? And this is a tricky track at the Cookout Southern 500.
I think it's going to be fucking nuts. I think it's going to be total chaos. I think it's like Chastain is somebody that, you know, I always think of the wall. I just think of the wall and what he did to get into the playoffs at one time. And they have not had a good season at all. And they could really, really use getting him in there, because like having your second best driver in the playoffs and not your number one with the big sponsors is kind of like, I don't know, man. You got SPG coming in next year, three cars in the cup. You need to get into the playoffs.
No doubt. And you know, he'll do anything he can to get in there.
If he
wreck people, whatever he's got to do. So there's been precedent set so far, although Austin Dillon still has to win to get himself in. I found it hard to pick a winner here. I thought there was guys worthy contenders. Denny Hamlin, four wins here. Keselowski won here the last race. He's got two wins. Truex got a pair. Tyler Reddick's been really hot here. Eric Jones has two wins here. You got a lot of contenders here. I ultimately ended up on going a little bit off the beaten path because his momentum has been really good lately, and he keeps saying he's going to win, and why not this time? I'm going with Ty Gibbs this week.
Oh, I respect that. I respect that a lot. He is on my list. He is actually next to my circled winner, and that would be Chase Elliott.
Oh, I like that one. All right.
I was Elliott, or I was going to wait either Matt for a crash and then pick my winner. Just see what happens. After last week, I was so just thrown off of being like, man, I got to wait to pick these winners at these huge speedways.
I know. It's really frustrating. I considered William Byron. Didn't love his price. Briscoe 65-1. He's had, he's been okay at this track. Joey Logano, I thought, was interesting at 16. But I really do think a guy who is going to need to win this to solidify his point spot or to get in. So I think Chris Buescher's in play as well, 16, 17 to 1. And then Keselowski, but I just don't love his number. Kyle Busch, 17. I don't know any of these guys interest you at all.
Yeah, I got the my sleepers. I have Busch, Barry, Jones, and my guy in the 38, Mr. Gilliland.
Okay. Well, he was running good again last week until he had bad luck. But and I think Josh Berry was too. I mean,
Berry, his wreck was fucking crazy.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you're right, though. I think in play is going to be valuable in this race. You could see some good in play opportunities if you're paying attention and you're starting to see who's got a good car, because you're going to see guys try to hang back a little bit and then make their big hard push late in stage three, I think. Because the last thing you want, if you need these points or to win, is to go out early. You want to give yourself a shot. You want to be around in the final stage. So the way you do that is stay away from Bubba Wallace, and you might be okay.
Yeah, it's just crazy. It's crazy how close, you know, the 16, 17, 18 guys are, like, number-wise.
Right.
Like, Briscoe, do you think Briscoe, I know I said it last, like, I guess it's all up there. Anyone can fucking win this.
Yeah, no, I can't, I mean, I couldn't talk anybody off him at 65 to 1. He could absolutely win. Will it be Denny Hamlin again? Keselowski, guys that have dominated at this track, I don't know. Truax's last go at Darlington, maybe he gets into the victory lane one more time. I don't know. I think it's going to be a great race, but and I can totally see Chase Elliott winning, and then I'm thinking Ty Gibbs has a lot of momentum going right now, so that's why I took a shot with him. But there's so many potential winners here.
No, there are. You're right. My list, it's one of my longest lists of people to picture in a winner, and I just was like, all right, Reddick, no, your number's bad. Gibbs, pick Gibbs. I like Elliott, man.
Yep, I think it's good. You can't ignore the price on Chase Elliott. You're getting almost 20 to 1. That's absurd. He's due to have a good run here. And I think you're going to see these guys starting to dig in a little bit more now as playoffs start to a little bit more focus. See guys like Byron and Elliott who've drifted a little bit. Alex Bowman ran well for me last week. I thought at one point he was in contention having a shot. Can these guys stay out of trouble? That's the question. And here's the big question, Sam. Can you answer this one for me? Will we see overtime?
Yes.
I think that's probably the best bet of the whole thing.
Honestly, Matt, you're right. If there is one bet to place, it is that we will see overtime because there's so much on the line. I don't even know how many cars are going to be around towards the end because there's so much that has to happen. Yeah. There may be 15 cars on the final, you know, the final caution because it's going to be the final two. They always do that.
Yeah, it'll look like the Pirates do right now. Just a mess of sheet metal and scrap everywhere, smoke and rubber, and a lot of disappointed people.
Ugh. How are your Orioles doing? They're doing all right, aren't they?
Yeah, they're treading water. Their pitching's an issue. They've got the bullpen sorted out, at least the back end part. They at least identified Dominguez can be a closer, Cano in the eighth inning, and then the CNL Perez and a couple of the other guys to match up. So they got that part established. At least Kimbrel's not coming out anymore.
Right.
Can't have that happen anymore. The Pirates should get him next year. It'd be good. So
that would be good.
Well, Sam, thanks for joining us as always. Best of luck this weekend in the racing, and my condolences on the Pirates.
Yeah, and we're no more Go Box. I guess go Steelers.
Go yeah,
Steelers.
Here we go.
Russ here is we QB. Go Steelers. Russ is QB one. That's exciting. Yeah, go Steelers. Fuck Shelton.
All right, buddy. We'll see you next week. Thanks for checking in.
Yep.